This is the SF Signal Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Patrick Hester. And my guest tonight is no stranger to the SF Signal Podcast listeners out there. I apologize once again for my voice. I am still recovering from Capricorn 35. My voice comes and goes. Hopefully one day it will just come and stay. My guest has been on plenty of panels here on the podcast. He's written posts for the site. I believe he's participated in some mind melds, unless I'm horribly, horribly mistaken. He's an author and a freelance writer, and we're going to get around to what exactly it means to be a freelance writer here in just a minute. His stories have appeared all over the place. He's been doing quite well here recently. I think he's finally come into his stride and is really, you know, kind of getting out there and getting his stuff published, which is awesome. And in the not-too-distant future, his first novel in the Pathfinder Tales series is going to be published. And that's really exciting, so I'm very proud of him for that. His name is Josh Vogt. And not only do I get to hang out with him on the show tonight, but also at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference in April, where he and I are going to be part of the faculty for the conference. And what that means is we get a special badge that lets us into everyone's room to go through their bags. That's probably not true. How's it going, Josh?
It's going really well. Thanks, Patrick.
And are you excited about Pikes Peak Writers?
Very much so. It's actually been a few years since I was to my last one, but there was a while there. I think I went to about five or six in a row and always had an amazing time. So definitely glad to be going back and super excited to be going back as faculty for the first time as well.
And did you cut your teeth there a little bit? Did you learn some stuff?
Oh, yeah. It was pretty formative with a lot of the workshops and panels that I was on, getting to meet other authors in the community, getting to meet agents and editors along the way. I actually I did a lot of the pitch sessions that people did there and had an agent thanks to Pikes Peak for a while. So yeah, it was very, very formative.
And so for the benefit of our listeners, Pikes Peak Writers Conference is something that I became aware of a couple years ago because I know JT Evans, and I've known JT for a very long time. And we have co-founded a writers group together. And he never really pitched me hard on Pikes Peak Writers, but he kind of subtly would mention it here and there. And it's a little bit different. There's a lot of science fiction and fantasy people that go to this, fans and authors, really, because you're a fan first, right? And then you decide someday that you might want to write something, and then you start going to something like this and learning a little bit. And is that kind of the path you took, Josh, or did you always know that you wanted to write?
I tried to write my first novel when I was about 8 years old, and I got 3 pages handwritten before I realized I had no idea what I wanted to write next in the story. So I gave it up until early college, and that was when I was trying to make those career choices of what I wanted to do the rest of my life, and writing became my sudden focus and passion. And I started researching, you know, how do you build a career as a writer and an author?
Whoa. You were researching? You, Josh?
Just a little bit. it's something I know I rarely do. But one of the big points was people told you to get out and go to conferences. That's where you learned. That's where you connected with other writers and with other professionals. And Pikes Peak was one of the big ones in the area. So that's what I started investing in.
I've heard it compared to Surrey. Favorite.
I don't know about that.
Favorite. and so, I mean, it is one of the bigger ones. Mm-hmm. And it's different than a science fiction convention because there's no anime track, you know, there's no game room.
It's very craft focused. It's very industry focused. And the authors and guest speakers that they've had come have always impressed me. I mean, I'm sure last year you spoke with, what was it, Jim Hines, mm-hmm. Chuck Wendig, and Gail Carriger.
Yeah. Actually, oh my gosh, I'm going to completely forget her name now. There was a mystery thriller writer who was a reporter. That's what she did. She was like come on, Patrick. Come on, brain. You know Jacqueline Allen on Channel 7 here in Denver? Like, she goes out and investigates, and she's the one that's coming up behind you and saying, hey, how come you're ripping people off, you know? And she kind of did that kind of stuff, and then one day decided, I have so many stories in me, you know, and I've seen so much, I just want to write. And that's kind of how she got her start. So, yeah, all four of them were wonderful keynotes. And this year, it's R.L. Stine, Mary Kay mm-hmm. Andrews, Andrew Gross and Seanan McGuire.
Yep. It's going to be pretty incredible.
I'm totally taking credit for Seanan because I made a point of introducing her to JT last year at Mile High Con, or the year before. So I'm totally taking credit for that. But yeah, it's different in that, you know, you come in and you spend all your time together. You eat together, you go to your panels together and your workshops, and then afterwards you go to the bar together.
Right. Well, or some people just go to the bar and wait there for everybody else to catch up, one of the two. I don't know what the average attendance is now these days, but I mean, there was a – it's both expansive enough that you will find someone to connect with, but it's also intimate enough that you feel like you're there with friends and peers. Yeah.
So what are you going to be talking about there? You're on faculty this year. That means that when people go to the website and they look under faculty, your mug is there.
It means I have to look like I know what I'm talking about, doesn't it?
Yeah,
a little bit. All right. So yeah, I've got three main workshops that I'll be presenting. The first one is constructing a sci-fi or fantasy novel, and that one's basically going to be a world-building type workshop, talking about everything that goes into building a genre world from scratch, constructing religions or systems of magic, figuring out what goes into developing a realistic culture so that it actually feels like a living, breathing world and not just a pastiche or of ours, or going beyond the normal faux medieval type fantasy realm. So that's going to be one of them. I love that sort of part of the process whenever I'm working on a new story, just coming up with all the different new creatures and types of weapons and all that sort of thing. So that'll be one big one. The second one is actually going to be the building the foundations of a freelance writing career, because that's what I do when I'm not writing fiction. I'm writing for freelance clients. And I've been asked many times over the past 3 or 4 years that I've been doing it full time, how I got here, how can other people emulate that? What does it take to really, what does it mean to be a freelance writer? How do you get clients? How do you get paid? All that kind of stuff. So I'm going to be answering a lot of those questions and talking about what it means to be a professional contract writer, basically.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to list the last one, but what was your question?
Well, talking about the freelance writer stuff, because you and I have talked a little bit about that before, and I do follow you on Facebook. You're on Facebook and Twitter, right?
Yes. I am on Twitter at JRVote, and then Facebook is, I believe it's just JRVote as well.
And you sometimes you will post you're already laughing. Sometimes
I know what you're talking about.
Sometimes you will post the ridiculous ads that people put out there for writers, you know, where they're trying to get you to write something for free or for the exposure or, you know, for this box over here that we don't know what's in it. You know, it could be a lot of money. It could be a punch in the face.
Yeah. That happens a lot when I'm in gig hunting mode. So if I'm getting business in from clients that I already have, then I'm not out there looking as much. But yeah, when I'm out there looking, I run across some of the most absurd advertisements and, you know, calls to action of, you know, there was one in particular, I'm trying to remember exactly what it said, but it was basically, we want you to be passionate. We want you to love writing, but not to make a living out of it or expect to make a living out of it, because, you know, it's just like, really? You realize you can do that.
That's a very popular thinking in the world.
It is.
And I don't understand it. Do you have a theory as to why people think that you should just write stuff for free?
Because a lot of what they're writing or asking for written content for is for content marketing. You know, content marketing in the advertising and marketing and sales field, that's the big push these days. The more content you have, the better you show up on the search engines, the more you're going to draw in potential audiences and clients and all that kind of stuff. But writing that content and writing it well enough to actually get a return on it is actually hard.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And so But you have to be consistent about it, and you have to have, you know, new and original thoughts. And people realize that they don't want to do that work, but maybe they can get a bunch of, especially newer, up-and-coming, aspiring writers to buy into the idea that they can jumpstart their career by providing this content either free or a little better than. So it's really them being taken advantage of.
Well, and sometimes it also it goes even further and beyond that, because, you know, I've read Writer's Beware, and I've read Christine Rush's blog, and I've seen the horror stories of writers who have publishing contracts, and then their publisher comes to them and says, "Hey, we want you to write a short story set in the universe that we can give away on Kindle, or that we can give away, you know, to get people interested in the book. And of course, we're not going to pay you for it. So just write the story. Right. And if you don't write the story, we're not going to publish your next book."
And I know people who have not just short stories, but novellas.
I know.
You know, without any addition. I mean, with the Pathfinder Tales book, Forge of Ashes, I did write a prequel promo short story for it, but they did pay me for it. Mm-hmm. So cheers to them for that. But yes, it is that thing of people can try to just get as much out of you as they can. And I think one of the other concepts out there that kind of twists it around is that when people are wanting you to ghostwrite for them, either short stories or novels, they think that coming up with the idea is the hard work. And so if they have the idea and maybe they have an outline, they've already done the hard work. So it doesn't, why should they pay you that much to sit down and write 100,000 words? They'll share the profits if it sells, of course. Or maybe they'll give you an actual byline, but, you know, you're not going to own the rights, and you're going to be paid a pittance for it, because for some reason they think the writing is the easy part.
I wonder if that's the James Patterson model.
Maybe.
James Patterson's Lucky 13, written by John Smith.
There you go. No, I'm all for ghostwriting, and I've done that to some degree, but when it's actually worth it, when it's made worth my time. And so, that's something that I've actually had to adjust to as a freelancer, is determining what projects are actually worth my time versus, is it just worth getting another credit to my name, not being paid anything?
Sure. So you're out there, you're writing marketing copy if they'll pay you for it. You're writing website copy. You're doing emails. Yep. You're doing, you know, real writing every day.
There's very little that I haven't written in that venue, and very few industries that I don't write within. Mostly it's taking, a lot of times it's taking more technical material and making it actually readable for lay people.
And that's not always credited.
Oh, no.
Right.
No, I mean, I can have a portfolio of stuff, but there are times that once they pay me for it, it's theirs. Mm-hmm. I mean, whenever they pay me for it, it's theirs, and they can do whatever they want with it.
Sure.
Yeah, but I have had to sign NDAs and that sort of things for certain clients.
Sure. I had an assistant who I basically, we were doing the content marketing thing, but we were doing it on a blog. And so she's like, can I have a byline? And I'm like, well, absolutely you can have a byline, because it's a blog. You know, I'm going to create you up with an author account, and you're just going to go to town. And these, you know, we're going to come up with stories, and these are what you're going to write, or articles, and these are what you're going to write. And she's like, okay, great. So, you know, there's that, but then there's also the, oh, well, I need you to translate our business to a website.
Right.
And that typically you don't get a byline on.
No, I mean, there's no reason they're going to say website written by Josh Vogt or anything like that. Yeah. No, they want to look like they put the hard work into that themselves. And, you know, I don't do any of the design work or graphics or what have you, but I certainly work with a lot of agencies and design and graphic artists on that. So it's very creative. I love it. I'm rarely bored. I enjoy the diversity of the work that comes my way.
Sure. And that's on top of the fiction. So
And then there's a little bit of crossover, because I freelance for some tabletop role-playing game companies as well. Mm-hmm. I've written a number of manuals and campaigns and adventures and all that sort of stuff. So it is fiction, but it's not storytelling necessarily, except for the tie-in stuff.
And
so.
do you get a credit for that? Like if you write an adventure for a game, Can someone see on there that it says, you know, it was written by Josh Vogt? And can they then go, well, this was really great. I loved this one. I'm going to go find all of Josh's game adventures that he's written. Is that something people can do?
Oftentimes for that, yes. I have not actually, I can't think of a time that I've written for a game company that I didn't get credit for it in some way. And if you actually are on my website, I have a page that lists most of my gaming work to this day. And that just, some people have gone there and contacted me because of that.
And does that website happen to be jrvote.com?
It is jrvote.com or joshrvote.com. Either will get you to the same place.
And it's VOTE, right?
VOGT. And you knew that, but thank you.
I did know that. So what's the third thing you're going to be talking about at Pikes Peak Writers?
Well, you actually mentioned it briefly, scams.
Oh,
scams, yeah. And shams. And actually, it's going to be a dual presentation with myself and Angie Hodap.
Oh, I know
who
Angie.
Is an agent.
Yeah,
she's great. And we've done some presentations on this topic at other conferences and conventions. So we're really looking forward to kind of building up a bit of a bigger workshop on it, learning how to realize that you're being taken for a ride either. And this is mostly aimed towards people wanting to be authors. So things like scam agents, scam literary agents, bad editorial services, people who just try and take your money and run, bogus contests and vanity presses, all those sorts of things.
I love the bogus contests. Yeah, send us your story. We own it from this point on. And if you win, we might do something and you never know. But we own it, so good luck.
Well, actually, I'm trying to remember who told this story. For some reason, Kat Rambo's name is in my head on this one, but it may have been somebody else. But she talked about a contest. She was at a conference with another author who billed himself as an award-winning author. And he had a prestigious contest, you know, label and all this kind of stuff. And he had been judged by a very best-selling science fiction author, whose name I'm also blanking on at the moment. I could probably Google it in about 30 seconds. But she researched the contest and realized that this author had hired the best-selling author to judge the contest, set up a website and everything for it, and then his was the only manuscript that ever got submitted. So obviously, the guy had to, you know, the other author had to name him the winner because he was the only contestant, and therefore he could go forward and say he was an award-winning author. So it's not just people getting scammed by contests, but using labels to make themselves seem more than they are.
This is one of those times when I actually wish this was a video podcast so people could see my expression.
Are you kind of wishing you had thought of that first?
No, I'm sitting here absolutely stunned. My jaw is almost on the desktop. Wow.
And I'm gonna Google that to make sure I have the actual names involved and can talk more specifically. But that's what people do, and so it's on both sides of the equation. But I have loved resources like the Writer Beware from CIFWA.
I love it.
The work that they've done there, and again, my penchant for research has helped me because I learned very early on a lot of the warning flags. To stay away from these sort of things. And it's helped me immensely.
And I've told this story before. I don't know if I've told it here on SF Signal, but I know I've told it somewhere, maybe on Functional Nerds. But I have a cousin who's younger than I am, and my aunt is her grandmother. And one day my aunt sent me an email, and she says, "Hey, I don't know anything about writing, but April has sent this story. Would you take a look at it and tell me if it's any good? Because I don't know." And I started reading it, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is horrible. She needs a lot of work. I mean, this is." It was like the first paragraph was almost filled the first page, and was like one complete sentence running on with the periods. I mean, it was really, really bad. And I replied to her, and I said, "Well, I'm going to be honest with you. This needs a lot of work. She needs sentence structure. There's a lot of things that she needs." And she's like, "Well, she's got a publisher who's telling her she's going to publish it, and it was only going to cost her like 10 grand. And yep. I went, and what publisher are they talking? Publish America. I'm like, oh my God, no. She says, well, she won't listen to me. You need to tell her. So I sent her this long email and I'm like, look, here's my sources. Publish America is bad. You should never pay. You should never, you know, buy your book to be published kind of thing. It's like you're buying the publishing. You should never do that. They should be paying you, not the other way around. Blah, blah, blah. Send this long email. Nothing, no response, no nothing. And then I saw on Facebook that she was so happy that she got her book in the mail. Not good.
So we're gonna try and help people avoid that moving forward as much as possible.
And sometimes, I mean, now that one could be fairly obvious. Sometimes they're not obvious at all. Sometimes they're very sneaky. Yeah.
And there's also a lot of gray areas. Like one of the things that I'm seeing more and more, and I'm sure many people out there have, are marketing agencies or public relationship agencies that bill their services to authors. And so you start getting press releases in your email. And I've gotten so many press releases from PR agencies trying to, you know, hawk their authors on me, and they don't have any unsubscribe option. I have to email them back several times until they stop sending these to me, and they're doing nothing but hurting the author's reputation. And they're getting paid, you know, probably thousands of dollars to do this.
And just so people understand, you can't email something like that out in America or Canada. Actually, it has to have an unsubscribe. Otherwise, you're in violation of federal law.
Yeah, and so. And there are times when it's a violation, and there are times when it's just people are getting paid lots of money for, and they're not returning anything of value. Mm-hmm. So it's not even that they're necessarily doing anything illegal. It's just that the author could be putting those funds in far better places. So yeah, it can be a mess sometimes.
Yeah, it can. it reminds me of the, you know, the realtor, the low end realtor who pays the person, you know, $50 to put flyers on every door in the neighborhood. Mm. And then when the realtor drives off, the person pockets the $50 and puts the flyers in the trash can. So let's talk a little bit about your fiction though. So you talked about the games that you've written. Can you share some game stuff that you've done that people might be able to go out there and check out?
Oh, absolutely. One of the systems that I've written within a decent bit is from Gunmetal Games. It's called Interface Zero, and it's actually Interface Zero 2.0. I helped with some of the core rules, several of the world setting chapters. I helped with a couple of the campaigns, including one called Extraction with Extreme Prejudice. I also did a crossover role-playing manual. Modifius does a setting called Octoon Cthulhu, which is basically Cthulhu horror in World War II. And so we took that and combined it with Interface Zero, which is set in 2090, and we did two halves of this book that linked Cthulhu and World War II with cybernetic technology in the future. So it's called Interface 19.40. And that was a lot of fun to write. And then there was another writer who partnered with me on that to write an original adventure set in both settings. Aside from some of the manuals, I have also done some tie-in fiction. So for 99 cents to pitch that,
yeah, go for it.
There's Privateer Press does little tie-in shorts in their Iron Kingdom setting called Iron Kingdom Excursions. And I've got two of them out so far. One is called Widowmaker's Lament, and the other is Honor and Death. And you can pick up those with two other authors, including Richard Lee Byers, Larry Correa, Richard Lee Byers again, and Orrin Gray. And they're just these little, almost flash fiction pieces set in their worlds. Really high adventure and kind of a steampunk setting, but a lot of fun.
Very cool.
So those are just a few things, yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the novel coming out in May.
Yeah, I actually have two novels coming out. The one that you mentioned before is with Paizo's Pathfinder Tales, and that's Forge of Ashes. And that, I love to just call it, it's just a great sword and sorcery adventure that's just chock full of monsters and magic and mayhem is the best way to explain it. It focuses on a female dwarven barbarian called Akina. And she returns home after fighting abroad for about 10 years to discover that her family's been disgraced and her mother has disappeared into the tunnels under their mountain home. And Akina has a bit of a temper issue, so she sets out to figure out what's happened and to find a way to get her mother back, and usually doing so by trying to inflict lots of violence on anyone who gets in her way. So that was a lot of fun to write, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how people enjoy it, because Paizo hasn't done a dwarven-centric book before, so it's kind of the first time that we'll get to see that in detail. Right. I even got to draw the map that they're going to use for one of the cities. So, you know, getting to add some detail and lore to that setting was just so much fun.
So you just made Paul Wiemer drool, because, you know, he's such a map guy, and that's like a huge thing for him. And I know that he does a lot of maps for his games and stuff. So I think you probably just crushed his dreams a little bit, because that's something I think Paul would love to be able to do. So you know what? If James is ever looking for someone to do some maps for him, you should look up Paul Wiemer.
I am sure it was. I'm sure they're going to pretty it up, the one that I actually sketched out, mm-hmm. but they seem to like the end result for the most part.
That's good. That's cool.
So that's I believe it's going to be officially published the end of April, and then it'll be distributed in available bookstores probably the first or second week of May.
So I've got an idea. I've got an idea for a novel, and I wanted to pitch it to you, because one of the things you can do at Pikes Peak Writers is you can actually pitch the idea of a novel. I grew up in a house where my brother was a huge Bruce Lee fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about like an urban fantasy series. I would call it Enter the Janitor.
Well, fancy that coincidence, because that's the name of the second book I'll have coming out at the end of May.
No, what are the odds?
I don't. It's astronomical. Let's leave it at that. It should actually be out in time for Denver Comic Con, so we should be selling that. It's coming out through Wordfire Press, and so yes, the title is Enter the Janitor. It's the first in a planned for and hopeful series called The Cleaners. The second book is called The Maids of Wrath, and that should be out in 2016.
Nice.
So that kind of the name should kind of clue you in that it's a bit of a darkly humorous urban fantasy. Mm-hmm. The Enter the Janitor, as the name suggests, is about a janitor, Ben, who works at a supernatural sanitation company, where instead of wizards and sorcerers and mages, you have janitors and maids and plumbers who are fighting against the forces of corruption in the world. And the main thrust of the story is that Ben has to track down the source of this disruption between purity and corruption, and do it before it trashes several major cities, and at the same time has to keep his germophobic new apprentice alive before she gets herself killed. Yeah, I've been waiting for this one to come out for a few years now, so I'm really excited to see it as well.
Well, that's
awesome. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And
it's gonna be
awesome. No, it's gonna explode. Yeah. And it's gonna clean up.
Yeah. Oh, the many puns that could have. There could be.
And this is once again one of those times where so obviously the listeners, I hope by now, understand that I've known Josh for a little while, and he is local to Denver, and we get to see each other at conventions and stuff. But this is one of those times where I do wish that this was a video podcast, because when I do make a bad pun, Josh gets this expression on his face that is priceless. So that would be kind of fun to be able to share with people. The Wordfire, that's Kevin J. Anderson, right?
Yes, that's Kevin J. Anderson and Rebecca Moista's
very cool
imprint. They've been working with getting their books distributed through Bane, and they've also been partnering some with Tor through some of their convention promotions. So it's been really fun to see that growing, and there's a lot of great authors who have been joining alongside, and they do really good work. I'm really happy to be working with them.
So your Pathfinder book is coming out in May. Mm-hmm. Is it also going to be part of that Tor deal? Because I saw that Tor was going to be doing some Pathfinder books too.
Actually, the first one that will be under the Tor deal is Dave Gross's new novel, which comes out right after mine, Lord of Rings.
So you missed it by that much.
By that much. I'm not sad about it or anything. I'm very happy that they've got that deal for them. It's going to do a lot to get the Pathfinder tales into more readers' hands. And of course, if James Sutter ever wants me to write another one, I will throw myself upon that.
Well, here's the thing though. The Tor deal could be quite lucrative for the Pathfinder mm-hmm. authors. So, I know Dave, if you want, we could take him out and see if we could get yours to be the first one.
Well, I think I might be seeing him at Gen Con, so that would be a little awkward. Hey, Dave, don't look behind you for a few seconds.
Yeah, right?
No, it's going to be pretty cool.
Bring in the janitor.
I got a chance to help read through some of his Lord of the Rings novel, and I absolutely loved it. So he deserves all the attention he will get.
Oh, don't get me wrong. He's an awesome guy.
Yeah, he is.
So your Pathfinder book comes out in May. Your janitor mm-hmm. book comes out, you said, near Gen Con?
No, Denver Comic Con. Comes out right at the end of May.
Okay, end of May. So that's pretty cool. Are you gonna do like mm-hmm. a big thing at Denver Comic Con for it? Are you gonna do like a signing or a launch party or anything?
I'm thinking about. I definitely want to do a launch party of some sort, whether it's for just Forge of Ashes or maybe something joint at Denver Comic Con. I haven't figured that out yet.
I definitely want to. You can't say joint and Denver anymore together because people get the wrong idea.
Right. But I mean, I call this, instead of just my debut novel, it's my debut year. And you can't help but celebrate a once in a lifetime thing. You know, this is.
Sure.
The culmination of a dream I've been going after for over 10 years now. So, yeah, I'll make a big deal out of it as much as I can.
So, how does the Pathfinder stuff work? Is it just you get contracted for one book, and then if it does well and they decide they want more, they come back to you for another book? How does that work?
I have seen other Pathfinder authors get contracts for multiple books at a time. I know that Wendy Wagner. She did The Skinwalkers, which is sure. excellent.
Yep.
She's working on a second novel. Howard Andrew Jones has, mm-hmm. I think he got a 3-book contract yeah. with them, and he's already written most of them, and they're just going to be coming out every other year. This is either the 5th or 6th one from Dave Gross. So yes, I mean, there's certainly the opportunity for multiple books. And if I got to write another Akina story and her companion Andrum, I would love to. I also have other ideas for a brand new cast.
Very cool. Well, obviously you have original ideas as well, because that's where the janitor world comes from. But since you do have so much background in role playing games, are you considering other novels and other series? You know, would you do a Halo novel if they came to you?
I've actually really liked shifting into the media tie-in realm. Mm-hmm. I enjoy playing in other people's sandboxes, and I have a fun time either taking Akina is an original character. The plot is an original story. It's just set within sure. the boundaries of
sure.
that world. So I have no problem doing that, or taking pre-existing characters and shifting to them. So yes, if another franchise wanted me to work with them, or you know, I've been kind of keeping an eye out there. I like having my own original stuff out there. I like the idea of progressing more into some of the tie-in work as well. And whatever case it is, I'll be doing my best work all along.
Well, and to your point, different sandboxes have different rules. Some of them, like Pathfinder right now, is fairly open, and they'll let you do a lot of different things.
Right.
But I'm sure that if you went to Dungeons & Dragons and Wizards of the Coast, you'd have more rules you'd have to follow. You know what I mean? Because they're more yeah. established universe. So I can see that.
Well, yeah, I mean, with Pathfinder, there were definitely a few. When I got my edits back from James, there were definitely a few chapters that he was like, Yeah, we can't do that. You know, we talked about that. We talked about that some in the whole development of the plot and outline and everything, but there were still a few instances where I either, you know, missed something, or a creature did something that they shouldn't be able to do, or you know, a spell happened that it couldn't have happened that way. So there were definitely some changes, but nothing that like broke the plot or anything like that, which I was grateful for.
That's good.
But yes, it is that balance of presenting it in a fun and adventurous way while also recognizing it's based on game mechanics underneath it all.
Well, and that has been a criticism that I've heard from some people especially the role-playing game kind of stuff, is like someone will say, well, you know, I was reading this and I could tell that, you know, they rolled for a random encounter. Do you think that's a fair criticism? Do you think that's not a fair criticism?
It can be. I mean, it certainly can be. I think that because, yes, you want it to be able to inspire people to go out and play the game. I mean, that's part of the process. You want people to be, oh my gosh, that's a cool character concept. I should go do that. And if they go and then realize they can't play that or do something that happened, then they're going to be disappointed. So yes, there is that sense of trying to be loyal to the mechanics, but not making them seem mechanical in the moment. For instance, one of the things that I did hear from James was, and I think it was on an interview of some sort, because he's written several Pathfinder novels himself.
Yeah.
Death's Heretic and, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the second.
Redemption Engine or something?
Yes, that's it. Redemption Engine.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. Good save. But he talked about how in a game, you can get a character shot, you know, either in the chest or in the throat with an arrow. And during the rounds and the turns that you play through it, that person can survive and be healed by the cleric or whatever. In a novel, in a story, it doesn't really feel as realistic if someone gets shot through the throat with an arrow or in the knee and survives or is just fine later on. So what James likes to say is that he just figures that those characters are getting a lot of critical hits, you know, that sort of thing. So there is some level of flexibility, and sometimes you play a little fast and loose with the rules. But in the end, you want it to be – sometimes it's less loyalty to the rules and more to the fact that you just want to have a fun time and a fun adventure. No.
So if someone out there is listening to this right now and – they're a diehard fan of a role-playing game. Do you have any advice for them if they're a writer, as far as, you know, how to kind of break into that?
Oh boy, part of that is getting some initial professional credits under your belt. When I first approached James, I had sold a handful of short stories. I had an agent at the time, so I had. Different statements that I could make of showing that I was serious, I was a professional writer. And he looked at a couple of my samples and obviously felt that they stood up to that claim. And so it wasn't just starting with a novel. I worked on my own stuff, built up that cred to some degree, and then was able to go out and pitch myself. So that's one way you can approach it, for sure. Going to conventions like Gen Con is another way to network and meet people. Ask them what they're looking for. Ask them what they're working on. If they need writers at that time, and you know what the process might be for passing a test or doing a really small piece of work at first and then moving on to something bigger, that would be another way to go about it.
Josh, when you go to a convention, because this is how you're making your living, right? So you're not doing anything else. You don't have a day job. This is your job.
Well. Right. Writing is my job.
So when you go to a convention, do you have a list of things that you're attempting to accomplish there? And the reason I ask that is because, and I've joked about it before here on the podcast, is you're very focused when you're at a convention. I've seen you, and you are soaking in knowledge, and you're going to panels, and you're asking questions, and you're doing. And I'm just curious: are you that organized that you're sitting there and you're going, you know, I'm going to talk to these 10 people, and I'm going to seek out, you know, this editor and this agent, and I'm going to talk to this publisher and this person and this person. Is that how you kind of approach it?
Yes.
I thought so.
Yeah,
it just dawned on me.
And it's not I don't ever want it to seem like a manipulative thing or something that stalking people or anything like that. But I do, before I go to conventions, I usually take the time to see who else is going to be there. Who are the other guest authors? Who are the guest editors and agents and the companies that might be there? And I do often make a list of, it'd be great if I could, find them, buy them a drink. And yes, anyone listening out there, I will buy you a drink anytime. Find them, get to know them, and it's not always just a handshake. Hi, my name is Josh Foote. Do you want to do business? It is a lot about developing the relational side of it. Getting to know what they love and getting to know what their own passions are, because they're in it because they love what they do. Mm-hmm. So it's really fun just to share that and go back and forth about different projects or stories or what they hope to work on soon.
And Josh can afford to buy you a drink, people, because usually he has something in his bag, some sort of healthy, watery something or other that he's drinking. So he could totally afford to buy you a drink.
I actually recently started a new YouTube channel where I'm just uploading little quick bits of behind the scenes conventions that I'm going to.
Oh, nice.
Little thoughts I have there, and that's on my. Linked on my website, but there's one on there that I show several of the essentials that I take to conventions, such as protein bars and beef jerky. So yes, it's a survival thing when you're there.
I tease you, but I do respect the work ethic and the discipline. Trust me, I do.
Thank you. I love what I do. So I will do everything in my power to write full time the rest of my life.
Well, Josh, we are running out of time. So I promised you about 45 minutes and we're coming up on that. So again, the website is jrvogt.com. And from there you can get to all your fiction, right?
Yep.
Can you pre-order stuff yet on the two books?
Yes. On Paizo.com, Forge of Ashes is available for pre-order, and I believe it's also available for pre-order on Amazon.
Here's the thing. Hold on, before you go too far. Mm-hmm. For our listeners, one of the questions, because I've had quite a few of the Paizo authors on, and I've had James on, and mm-hmm. I like James a lot, and I like the books, and I like what they're doing with them, and that's not just because they sent me stuff either. Because James was very kind and sent me some core rulebook stuff because I told him I was interested in Pathfinder. And he's like a crack dealer. The first one's free. And then from that point on, you're hooked. And all you can do is play the game all the freaking time. But there's one thing that people do ask me. When they go to Amazon to buy the Paizo books, there's no ebook. The ebook is available on Paizo's website.
Yes.
You can go to Paizo's website and get the ebook.
And I believe that with the new Tor distribution deal, they will start making them available through the Kindle as well.
Oh, nice. That's very cool.
And from what I've heard, that will also apply to the backlist of everything that's, because I believe they're coming up on 30 novels so far.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think I have them all. I think they basically sent them all to me.
Yeah, and I just heard that Sam Sykes, he just got a deal with him as well.
Did.
So that's really I'm looking forward to seeing what he comes up with.
That's going to be a very bloody, violent book.
Yeah, which makes it perfect for the game.
What was the other thing you were going to say? The other book.
I was just going to say I have a good number of stories that you can link to for free or find the anthologies that they're in. I have two Pathfinder Tales short stories that are available for free. They do weekly web fiction every Wednesday. So you can find that linked. One is The Weeping Blade and the other is Hunter's Folly.
Okay.
So those are up for free.
The second book in the cleaning world.
The Maids of Wrath.
So that's coming out from Wordfire. Mm-hmm. Are you required to write that while hiking in the mountains and dictating into a voice recorder?
No, I already have it written, so it's going to need to undergo some revisions based on some of the editing you've done the channel.
I'm just curious if that's a clause in any of Anderson's contracts with his authors.
If it was, that would be a very interesting development. I have experimented with that, and it's on and off for me. But
well, of course, I'm talking about Kevin J. Anderson, because I've had him on podcast before, and mm-hmm. I was blown away by the fact that he dictates into a recorder as he's walking in the mountains, because he lives down in Colorado Springs, if I'm not mistaken, or near there.
In Monument,
yeah. And my whole thing was, you know, I asked, does the person who transcribes it, do they just edit out all the huffing and puffing? And he's like, well, no, I've been doing it long enough now that I don't huff and puff anymore. It's like, well, screw yeah. you.
Yeah, his productivity levels are pretty amazing, yeah. as many people can tell by the amount of books he has out.
So can you pre-order that book? Can you pre-order the Janitor book?
The Janitor book, I don't believe is up for pre-order yet, but I will certainly make an announcement when it is.
Okay, awesome. So watch Josh's Twitter and Facebook for that announcement. And follow him on social media, because he can be very entertaining. And I do like when he posts the things he finds on Craigslist, the writer gigs, which I used to look at those too and get very depressed by them. Because it was yes. always, we're looking for writers. We don't want to pay you. Mm-hmm. We're looking for writers. You just get a byline. It's like, really? Bylines
$5
don't pay my mortgage.
For my sci-fi. Yes. I look forward to meeting many more folks throughout the year.
The other one I like is, we're launching a new group blog, and we're looking for writers. We can't pay you now, but mm-hmm. if you write enough content, eventually, maybe, if we ever become profitable, you might get a share in the profits.
Yeah, that and the whole thing of, if you write my novel and it sells really well, we'll split the profits. Anything based on future or promised sales is a very iffy bargain.
Yeah. So the Pikes Peak Writers Conference, again, is going to be April 24th through 26th. It's at the Colorado Springs Marriott. Josh will be there. Unfortunately, that's going to be a little early, so I don't know that they're going to have your book in the bookstore.
I'm not sure yet, but I may be able to get a box of author copies to bring with me.
Okay.
I will have to see exactly where it is.
So there is the possibility that Josh might be able to sign some books for you. So you should come and check him out. He looks like he's 22 years old. And he's obviously the most fit person in the room all the time. So just come and check him out and talk to him about writing and about his stories and about role-playing games and about scams. And I'm looking forward to seeing you, Josh, even though we've been seeing each other on Thursdays because we've been sort of kind of playing a role-playing game. But it'll be cool to hang out. And if you want to come, there's also a great bar con that happens after the conference there in the Marriott where everybody just kind of hangs out. It's a really cool bar. They may have remodeled it a couple years ago or something, but it's very neat. And it's a great place to hang out. So, Josh, thanks for coming on. Is there anything you want to tell people before I let you go?
I think we covered it. Thanks for having me back, Patrick.
No problem. Thank you, Josh. And I wish you continued success, sir.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends, and so on, and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF and F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic Wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.